Welcome to the Rent to Retirement Podcast, your resource for passive real estate investing and retirement strategies. If you're new to real estate or planning your financial future, you're in the right place. Join us at renttoretirement.com to find your path to financial freedom and an easy, carefree retirement. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Rent to Retires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, joined as usual by the founder and CEO of Rent to Retirement, Zach Lee Master. And today we're going to dive into one of the markets that we've had properties in for a little while, but we haven't really promoted or told people about why on earth they might want to invest there. And that is the areas around Columbia, South Carolina. We figured, you know what, who better to talk about that than our local team leader, and that is Nate. Nate, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about, you know, why are you somebody people should trust? Kind of what's the building background, kind of your experience, just so that they're comfortable with who they're actually buying from?
Yeah, that makes sense. So we've been a local builder here for 38 years. Actually, started off with our own architectural firm. I haven't been around for 38 years, obviously, but the company has. And the founder, who's still active today, specialized early on in like high level, high end, on the lake kind of properties. And we transitioned right around 2008, we transitioned into production building. That was sort of our bread and butter. It was sort of the biggest need around here. In migration, new household formation, industries popping up like crazy here in Columbia, South Carolina. So that was the big need and that was the big opportunity. And we've kind of flourished in that area. One of the things that we took with us from the high-end custom days is just execution. Every one of our houses go through the government's 45L engineer testing for energy efficiency quality products. And so all of those houses are certified on an annual basis. We feel really good about the product we put out, mostly because, and I don't know if you want me to get into this or not, but mostly because over the last 6 years, we've really streamlined our process. We did this way before it was cool to do during COVID, and we kind of eliminated a bunch of SKUs. We have, 15 major plans, but all of them use the same kind of components. We start every house as a spec home. We don't do any kind of customization. We bet our lives on the fact that we know what you want in your home better than you do. So we narrowed our product down to those selections, which gives us a great deal of purchasing power. So we can offer really the most affordable house in the market. And sometimes people think affordability with quality issues, but we have the highest quality and highest affordability.
It's all on the production side, as you said, Nate, transferring. It sounds like you guys have made a transition from a custom home builder more to production based, and just there's economies of scale with that. Build to rent, and you guys are no strangers to the build to rent space. Right. I understand you've built a lot for institutional buyers and things like that. And that's one thing we're seeing as a whole right now in the industry is that institutional money has slowed down a little bit, which leaves more opportunity for the individual investor to come in and participate in the build to rent products. We love new construction at Rent to Retirement because that's about 50% of what we do, because it's just, you get to be in a path of progress. In areas that are growing in the Southeast. We're excited to bring you on and showcase a new market. Same thing that you do, just like with many of our other builders. So you work in Columbia, but also secondary markets surrounding. I mean, we'll get into the details of why you're building in these areas and what type of tenant demographics and growth you're projected. But we love new construction in the Southeast because I think it's a combination of where you can be in a brand new built house that's going to attract a quality tenant. You're going to reduce your vacancy and tenant turnover. You likely will have strong appreciation both in rents and market value. And I think it's just a safe play long term. I mean, would you agree a lot with that statement? And I mean, is there anything you want to share about like specifically why you guys are building in the areas you are?
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of statements I can make comments on. We've delivered 800 houses over the last 3 years to institutional buyers, and you're right, that money is slowing down, which is good and bad, depending on what seat you're sitting in. It's good for us because our retail component of what we do is still pretty strong. But at the same time, with the interest rates the way they are, a lot of buyers are kind of priced out of the market, but they still need a place to live. And so we're glad that there's opportunities like this for people to get in. We have a, there's just, like I mentioned earlier, the number, if you look at the last 15 years in the Columbia and submarkets around Columbia, in-migration and new household formation has way far outpaced our ability as an industry to build homes for 15 years straight. And so we haven't seen a downtick at all in the demand for our product here locally, just from, or the people we have sold to that now rent these properties out. They're all fully leased. We're selling everything we put on the market just because the demand is so high, because there's so many people. Like, actually, the school district I'm sitting in right now has 500 new students move in every single year. And so that's just a, and we have a lot of industry here. You know, so Michelin's big here. Amazon's big here. But not only that, we have a big military presence. We're not, like the community we're talking about today is home of Shaw Air Force Base, which has 5,400 active duty military people, represent 11,000 family members. They stay on average of 8 years there in the place. So it's a pretty, it provides a pretty sticky tenant for you. At the same time, there's the housing for those 50 or 11,000 family members is very limited. There's like 2,500, 3,000 houses for about 2,500 of those people. And so the Shaw Air Force Base has gotten pretty creative in how they provide the voucher program for their active duty people to go out and get housing, either buy or rent in the area.
And so let's talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned the military presence there, the Michelin and Amazon in, you know, the Columbia area. But one of the things people sometimes get concerned about when it's the military is, you know, you've got the government part, which is fantastic, but sometimes military areas can get, you know, moved or shifted a little bit. What else is driving that area? Because, I mean, obviously there's more to it than just military. So what else is driving the area?
That's a good question. We this area is known a lot for the biotech industry, textiles, agriculture, especially primarily in Sumter. We have a heavy presence in the medical field. We have Prisma Health here locally, but also you have LexMed, which is a growing network. So it's the fastest growing medical network in South Carolina. That's in Sumter. And then not only that, you have of course the university. The university is a big employer. USC right here locally, a big employer around here that obviously has. I didn't say that well. I apologize.
Yeah, universities. They've got their span, and they definitely, nobody's, I don't think I've ever heard of a university getting fewer employees. That's kind of what's going on there. So tell us a little bit about the growth of the areas, because I know we like to talk about secondary and tertiary markets, because obviously we're not in like Columbia proper. We're in the kind of secondary. So tell us a little bit about kind of the growth of Columbia that's expanded out into. And we also have properties in Hopkins, and then we go out into Sumter. Kind of talk about the growth, because especially during COVID, we saw the flow of migration come down towards the southeast. Kind of how has that been going for y'all, and kind of what are we looking at there?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we've seen that's eaten up a lot of the area in which we traditionally would have like aggressively went towards for residential properties is the expansion of industry. There's been a lot of it here locally. The most recent one was Scal, which is building right outside of Columbia, building batteries for EVs, and which is going to be a big employer here soon here locally. That was the most recent example of it. But we've seen an expansion in industry a lot, which brings in jobs, which brings in you know, obviously a lot of people coming to the area. That's probably been more than just the natural migration of people to the southeast, that's probably been what we've seen the most of. And so just the area is around Columbia is pretty much built out by and large. And so you're seeing these tertiary markets. Columbia is probably considered a tertiary market by itself, but even the sub markets of Columbia, you know, I moved here from Ohio, and so when you drove 30 miles, you did that in about 27 minutes, and that was a big deal here. Like, I mean, it's an hour everywhere, so like everyone's used to it. No one complains about it or fusses. I live 7 minutes away from work, and I drive 40 minutes. which is what's making those sub areas like a Sumter or a Hopkins or really start to boom. And that's why we've kind of concentrated our product there.
That's a discussion we find ourselves having a lot with individuals that are looking at like the South in general, that aren't familiar. Maybe they're, you know, living in a highly populated area or more expensive area where it could take them an hour and a half to travel 5 miles to work, yeah. You know? So, I mean, it's all relative. So don't be thinking about it in terms of distance. It's really nothing for people to live in a community and commute an hour, regardless of distance. I think that's fairly safe to assume. And what we found with a lot of what we call these secondary and tertiary markets is that like the opportunity is right now with how expensive things are, is that you can get into an area where you have affordable housing, as long as there's strong industries and market demographics, like we just talked about. I absolutely love the idea of being around military bases, especially established ones like Shaw, which there's fighter jets there. I have many friends that are still stationed at Shaw, and it's not going anywhere, you know, and the U.S. is pumping more money into bases like that. So, and you have quality tenants that will tend to stay for a while, like you said, to, you know, subsidize rent from the government as well. But the opportunity with some of these secondary and tertiary markets is that we can get in and invest in them where you have affordable housing and you can still be positive cash flow, where if you look 5 or 10 years down the road, that may not be the case as more and more people move to these areas and they become more populated. You know, these areas tend to just expand out and kind of fill in gradually over time. So I think that's a lot of the opportunity.
Yep.
Yeah. And just so people know, I mean, if they're not looking at renttoretirement.com to see our inventory, these are homes that are, you know, right around 290, you know, sub $300,000 new construction. We're talking about, you know, 4-bedroom homes, you know, not insignificant square footage size. I mean, we're looking at 2000 plus square feet. So it's not like you're buying, you know, a $300,000 home that's, you know, 1100 square feet or 1000 square feet like you would in, you know, kind of the downtown areas most likely of places. So tell us a little bit about kind of the builds in general, kind of like the sizing, the bed and bath, kind of what are you and what kind of family size are we talking about? I mean, I'm assuming with military, it's probably younger people, maybe one or two kids, but they have room to grow. And just tell us a little bit about the builds. Are we looking at carpet in there? Kind of what type of home are we talking about?
Yep, that's a good question. We have a mixture. I mean, carpet upstairs, LVP downstairs. It's that the houses we're talking about today range, you know, that 2,300 square foot range, 4 or 5 bedrooms in the Azalea, and the Myrtle is definitely a 4-bedroom, 2.5 bath. It's you know, all the bells and whistles you typically would want. I spoke to it earlier. We've kind of done our homework on what the buyer wants more than the buyer knows what they want, right? And so we've had a lot of success with the open floor plan, the granite, the stainless steel appliances. It's everything you would expect out of a brand new home, except for the price. And I'm sorry, were you going to say it's there are 8-foot plates, which is pretty standard around here. And the best thing is that you're not talking about a small backyard. It's a sizable lot that you can raise a family on.
Adam, let's run through the numbers just so people have a real. I mean, this is kind of a newer market, so I mean, can you give us an idea of the research that we've done with the assistance of Nate in terms of like ROI, cash flow, home prices, and what people are looking at? It's pretty rare. We really like when we try to find new build opportunities and builder rent opportunities, we try to be in good growing areas, nice growing areas, where we have strong rental demand, diversity of industries. Specifically, the Southeast is great because of the, you know, supply and demand discrepancy and population migration. But we really want to be focused on areas that are below the median house price point nationwide, which is around $430,000, because we know, and below the median house price point for the areas as well. These are like starter homes. And I think that's a really good position, safe position to be in, because, you know, not only do you have the largest demographic of tenants, but also retail buyers, you know what I mean? These are not like high-end luxury houses where if we do have a market correction or slowdown or whatever, like those are usually the first ones to be affected because people are priced out of them. These are bread and butter quality houses in nice areas below $300,000 price points for many of them that, you know, you can get in, still have positive cash flow. Maybe don't expect double digit returns year one, but remember, in a growing area, we would expect rental increases year after year. But I like areas that are below the median house price point in a growing area, brand new construction that has, you know, quality tenant demographics in that area. And I think that's just kind of a recipe for a safe, secure, long-term portfolio.
Yeah. So we're talking about homes that are priced around 290. We're looking at rents of 2200, 2100 to 2300 square foot, four bed, two and a half or four bed, three bath properties. Your cash flow, depending upon what interest rate you're getting, you know, around $200 a month. Like Zach was saying, it's one that grows with time. And I know when we talk about some of, and just remember, South Carolina actually has a low property tax rate, especially compared to your Texases, where we love our property taxes here in Texas. But I know one of the things that might concern people is you're talking about military people, people making, you know, not $100,000, but, you know, decent living, but not. And so 2200 rent might be, you know, something that people might concern themselves with. But we talked a little bit before and we wanted to hit on it. And that is the military voucher program and kind of how it's helping renters there and kind of providing you with the opportunity for, you know, the people to get in there and handle rent increases. Can you tell a little bit about what that program is and how it's allowing people to, you know, get the $2,200 rent where maybe some people may not think that's the, you know, able to be gotten by, you know, a large percentage of the population?
Sure. You know, I mentioned earlier, there's housing on base for less than half of the people that are stationed at specifically at Shaw. And the voucher program varies based on it. I don't even know if they call it a voucher program, but we're referring to it as that. So the voucher program varies based on your rank in the military. Typically, they like to see your first three classes of soldiers, Air Force people. I don't know the proper term. I apologize.
Airmen.
Airmen. We'll go with that. They like to see the first three ranks stay on base in housing there. And so typically, they're providing those vouchers for higher ranked officials. My assumption is we're not privy to the exact amounts per rank, but my assumption is that it covers a great deal of your housing.
Yeah, well, not only that, but as you get up to higher ranks, you're not dealing with your 20, 21 year olds. You're dealing with people who have some maturity, who aren't likely to be doing anything to your house that is going to cause massive turnover costs.
Well, military in general, I mean, I'll speak to this because I was active duty Air Force for 7 years. I was a captain in the Air Force and stationed in a few different locations. But how housing works is you are actually subsidized. Like every single person, it's based on time and grade. So not only rank, but also your time in the Air Force. Every single person is provided their housing stipend. You know, that's part of your base pay. It's tax free. And it varies based on location. In some instances, there are certain areas where there's an extreme shortage of housing that the base cannot actually provide housing for. The lower ranking airmen that first come in, like, yes, they are encouraged to stay on base, but sometimes that's just not an option because there's such limited housing. One thing that the government in general and the military is not great about is housing. I mean, they're always extremely slow to do something. So this is an opportunity where, you know, in the private sector, from an investor perspective or from a builder, you can come in and provide these opportunities where, you know, you can generally get pretty quality tenants. Because even in the Air Force, yes, you get some guys right out of high school maybe that are just joining, but, like, you know, the government just doesn't let them do. There's checks and balances. They're on close watch. I mean, generally speaking, and if they screw something up, like sometimes the military can be on the hook for that. So my point is that you can often get, I mean, it's basically government subsidized rent in a lot of these areas where, you know, you have someone that is pretty much required to be a quality tenant, and there's consequences if they're not. And they earn sometimes higher, their housing allowance is higher than like the local rent. In a lot of these areas is higher than what the local market rent would be. And so you don't have problems with affordability. You can often get a better quality tenant in than saying like doing something like Section 8. And so I think military bases, I love being around military bases, and it provides opportunity for long and sometimes mid or short-term rentals as well, which we won't talk about today, but it's just a quality. I know that's not the only employer in the area, but military bases are a pretty safe bet if it's an established base like Shaw.
So whenever it comes, thank you for that, Zach. I do know that I have lived in places where there have been military tenants, and they've basically told me like, I can't do anything to this place because if I do, you know, my commanding officer is going to rain holy hell on me whenever the property manager tells them that I, you know, messed up the place in any way, shape or form. So it is definitely something that to keep in mind, especially as I know some people shy away from Section 8 because of the concern about the tenant quality, but you can kind of get a government subsidy and the quality tenant, which presents kind of the best of both worlds, because not like the federal government is reneging on their promises, especially to, you know, as we talked about, to the military in that regards. They can renege on their promises to us in other ways, but usually not when it comes to money. So you mentioned kind of the 8-year stay. I don't know if that was based on, you know, people staying at Shaw for 8 years or people staying in the properties for 8 years, but do you have any general idea about how long the tenants are staying in each of the in-homes in that area?
Yeah, because we have a little better glimpse into this than most, I think, builders would, because we've sold so much to BFR, larger operators. And what our customers are seeing in this area is they're seeing about a 4 to 5 year stick. They're turning every 4 to 5 years, which I don't know how good that is industry wide, but they seem to be pretty happy with it.
That is excellent. Yeah, your vacancy goes way down when you have someone staying past like 3 years. Like for new construction in general, I think we've in the Southeast, it's about 3 years. I think the average is just under 3 years. So I mean, that is good to hear. That's a great stat that we want to showcase, because if you have people staying in your house 4 to 5 years, you know, and look at on a brand new construction house that probably is going to have little maintenance, you know, your vacancy is probably going to be less than 2%. If it takes you even 2 to 3 months to find a new tenant and turn the property with, you know, maybe some minor repairs, you're probably calculating 2% below our vacancy. What do you think, Adam?
I mean, yeah, 5 years, even if you have a 2-year one, that's what, 2 out of 62. So, I mean, that's, 2 to 3%. And that's assuming it takes 2 months to find a tenant, which in an area like this where you're getting more people coming in, you're pricing yourself right. I would expect that to be even less than 2 months. And, you know, the resale, do you have any general idea, you know, it doesn't have to be specific numbers, about home appreciation I mean, obviously there's probably not been a ton in Sumter, but just kind of the general Columbia, has it been seeing appreciation even pre-COVID? I assume during COVID it saw a really nice bump, but what have y'all been seeing over the past maybe 10, 15 years?
Yeah, we've seen steady appreciation, like you would expect. Obviously it went gangbusters here recently, but we've seen there's been a 42% appreciation over the last 4 years, which I think that could be expected.
Can you say that again, Nate?
A 42% appreciation over the last 4 years.
A mere 42%.
Yeah. Which has really impacted the affordability around here, which is why it's so rare to see a house that you can still live in and make a good cash flow on in the 200,000s.
Yeah. So what would be your as we wrap up here, what would be your final pitch to people about why they would consider investing in this area as opposed to any other area that they might be thinking about? Give us the final plug that you would give to an investor.
Well, you know, I think the in-migration is not going to stop. You're going to have a steady flow of people coming. Like I said, I'm from Ohio, moved here 7 years ago. The famous joke is we strapped a snowblower to the back of our truck, and the first place we got to that they said, "What's that?" That's where we camped out at, and that's right here. And so, but not only that, like from buying from our company specifically, we just been doing this for too long, and we do it well. Our people ask how you get all the certifications you get. We just execute well. We build a quality product. We self-warranty all of our stuff. We don't farm it out like most of the builders do around here. We're the only regional builder left in our area. The rest of them are public builders, which there's nothing wrong with them, but they answer to different boards. We don't. And so we offer your standard 1 to 10 year warranties. We self-perform. We spend on average of less than $500 a house in the life of a warranty, just because that's how good of a product we put out.
Yeah, and I want to let people know, I mean, right now, these properties, they're not 5-6 months down the road from completion. These are, you know, right there knocking on the door, you know, getting really, really close to CO. So it's not something you can, you know, be too concerned about. If you're looking at getting something before the end of 2023, these are definitely an option for you. So just want to point that out before we go any farther, because I know I've talked to a lot of people recently who are like, hey, I got to buy something before the end of the year. I need something that's going to be done. So you can definitely get them to see that. So if you're interested in seeing more about these properties, you can head on over to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. You can kind of see the $290,000 new construction that we don't see a ton of. And $290,000 construction tends to go pretty quickly around here. So check it out there at renttoretirement.com. Nate, we really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about the area. If you have any questions that you want us to answer in future episodes, email those to podcasts@renttoretirement.com. That's podcasts@renttoretirement.com. Really appreciate the time you spent educating yourself today. We'll talk to you on the next episode.